It was an impressive sound and light show.
Yes!
Anya pumped her fist. It had all come together as she planned. Then it struck her hard. She was heading into the midst of that floating inferno.
That's why I get paid the big bucks.
Anya made no attempt at stealth. Speed was the plan. With all the orange and yellow flames billowing up already from a pair of junks, a small boat on the water was going to be visible to anyone who cared to look. She was banking on the fact that there would be no reason for anyone to bother looking for a random small boat in the first place. There were plenty of big, well-armed boats to worry about instead. If anything, accidental gunfire was the most likely thing to wipe her out. What Anya was witnessing was like the biggest, best fireworks show ever. It was so utterly unlike anything she had experienced that she actually felt little fear heading into it. A pair of banshee shadows crossed overhead, low enough to rock Anya's boat with their air wake. They had to be Rimba Parak jets. Anya passed within a few hundred yards of a 70-foot junk afire to the waterline, with orange flames bursting up higher than it was long, underlighting an enormous coil of black smoke as it squeezed into the sky. She smelled burning fuel oil and barbecue. She knew way too well what that meant, and suddenly it was very real. Panic rose inside her. She could barely breathe. The sudden, massive adrenaline dump, combined with the smell of burning human flesh, overwhelmed her. Anya managed to lean over the edge just in time. Anya unscrewed the top of a water bottle and rinsed her mouth.
Okay, I'm officially in deep now.
In an instant, it seemed, Anya found herself surrounded by ships churning the seas with ghostly wakes, raking up lines of spouts with heavy automatic weapons and geysers from misses by rockets, bombs, or cannon shells. She had no idea exactly what sort of ordnance was going off, but there was surely a lot of it. Ships blazed up with light. She saw huge muzzle flashes light the sky like sheet lightning. Explosions flashed, dazzling white. Flames rushed skyward like demons escaping hell. There had been about 20 vessels in the Red Hand pirate fleet when last Anya saw the overhead imaging in Weira's study. The Rimba Parak Navy had brought 10 to 12 surface craft to the party. There was a mix of coastal patrol vessels ranging in size from mere armed speedboats to Singapore-made bruisers, over 50 meters long and packing 76-millimeter guns, 30-millimeter machine cannons, and ship-killing missiles, along with the land-based Harrier attack jets. Though the Red Hand probably outnumbered the Rimba Parak forces in terms of manpower as well as hulls, the superior firepower and discipline of Weira's men would tip the balance in their favor. The explosions made the air seem solid. Sometimes it quivered all around her, as if she were trapped in clear gelatin. Yet she had no thought of going back. Once focused on her goal, Anya moved toward it inexorably. She would only alter course if a better one suggested itself. Anyway, she was well and truly in the middle of things here. The way back was at least as hazardous as the way ahead. She steered around a piece of flaming wreckage that appeared to be the remains of a lifeboat. A small boat with Rimba Parak's green, gold, and red pennants fluttering from its stern sped within 100 yards to starboard, its twin guns raking a junk on the other side of it. Seemingly out of nowhere, an RPG zipped in. The blast set off its fuel in a yellow fireball that flew straight up in the sky as the boat lost way. A burst of heavy automatic cannon fire ripped the air above Anya, making her duck her head reflexively between her shoulders. From the moment she had started to form the whole deranged scheme in her mind, listening to Weira and Pernoma and the sinister, lovely Lestari in the Sultan's study the night before, Anya had wondered how she was going to be sure which ship was her target. She had operated on the assumption that it would be pointed out to her in one or more of a number of ways. So it proved. Just as she started to fear she could never escape the hell boiling over on all sides of her, that if a stray bomb or bullet didn't wipe her off the planet, a ship churning along at top speed would blindly run her down, she saw a big junk ahead, just starboard of her bow, steaming full speed away from the dogfight. It showed no lights, nor, more significantly, did it show any sign of gunfire. It didn't stay dark for long. Enormous spotlights pinned the junk like horizontal pillars of blue-white light. One of the big corvettes and a patrol craft half its size pursued to port and starboard, converging like sharks. The junk dwarfed both. It was huge for a wooden ship. It must have been 200 feet long, its sharply raked stern and bow rising improbably high against the black sky. Anya thought it must have immense engines to thrust it over the waves so rapidly, raising a big green luminous wake. Fast as it was, though, it was no match for the two sleek, modern Sultanate craft. The junk's deck sparkled with muzzle flashes like a Chinese New Year parade. RPGs buzzed from it to flash against its pursuer's sloped armor, or hiss harmlessly into the swell. The Rimba Parak ships only returned fire with machine guns and Mauser machine cannon, instead of their missile racks or 76mm deck guns. That in itself told Anya the fleeing ship must be the Sea Scorpion, and it must be carrying the coffin. Unless all it's carrying is the transmitter, she remembered with a jolt of dismay. She turned her inflatable boat's prow toward it and pushed on at top speed. In the general battle, the grief was not all going one way. The pirates fought back with everything they had, big thudding 50 calibers and buzzing, sparking swarms of RPGs, as well as a constant hailstorm rattle of small arms. Off her starboard quarter, Anya saw the long, low shape of a Rimba Parak cutter ablaze from knife prow to stern. Ahead, the two Sultanate ships closed with the big junk. Anya saw what she thought were grapnel lines arcing toward the fleeing vessel. The pursuing ships came in right under the junk's looming counters. Men began to swarm up the lines and scale the sheer wooden sides of the hull. Grenades flash-cracked on deck. The muzzle flashes of assault rifles flared. Anya bit her lip as some commandos dropped to the waves like dark fruit. She tried to avoid the thought that Rira would certainly be among the first to board. She needed to get there, now. The Sea Scorpion's stern loomed above her like a dark wooden cliff, and Anya throttled back. The Zodiac's hard nose nuzzled the big ship to the starboard of its huge wooden rudder. She reached into her sea bag for her grapnel gun. She was getting to be an old pro at using it. Anya wasn't surprised to find no one guarding the stern. Several still bodies lay about the deck, which was slick with blood and hazardous from bushels of empty shell casings, which slid around dangerously underfoot as the ship rolled. Since both sides favored dark clothing for nocturnal operations, she had no idea who the dead were. It seemed like the majority of the commotion was coming from the hold, up ahead. Anya picked her way carefully forward. She froze and ducked down in the shelter of a yard-tall coil of cable as thick as her arm. Men were clambering over the starboard rail, dark-clad men with dark masks hiding their faces. They carried suppressed machine pistols. Sword hilts with cross-shaped guards jutted above each man's shoulder. Somehow, the Knights of the Risen Savior had joined the party. The sloping deck offered plenty of cover for Anya to sneak forward. The knights seemed focused single-mindedly on the noisy battle raging below. They showed no interest in securing the top deck. Moving from hiding point to hiding point, Anya found a hatch. It opened into darkness. She reached down, feeling with her hand, until she found a ladder. Black enveloped Anya. Her eyes adjusted slowly after the flash and flare of the naval battle. She reached tentative hands out to explore as her surroundings came dimly into view. She found herself in a world of closely fitted planking, a narrow gangway with a low overhead. It smelled better than Anya had expected the inside of a notorious pirate vessel to smell. Apparently, Eddie Cowcow insisted on certain standards aboard his flagship, assuming that was really where she was, of course. That didn't mean it smelled good. She could detect stale sweat, bilge water, diesel oil, burned lubricants, various forms of mildew and mold. She also smelled disinfectant and layer upon ancient layer of varnish. Yellow light spilling beneath a doorway ahead faintly lit the gangway. It was clear that there was combat taking place beyond it. Who the combatants were was anyone's guess. Sword in hand, Anya crept cautiously forward. Anya felt like she was inside a living thing. Ships move. Not just in terms of rolling and pitching and yawing in response to the vast, irresistible motions of the sea, but internally, flexing, shifting. There was one thing she did not feel or hear. The throb of big nautical engines. Apparently, either the pirates had shut them down, or the invaders had shut them off for them. Listening at the door did little more than confirm that fighting was going on close by, possibly right on the other side of the door. She reached for the rope latch, then pulled the door open enough to peek through. A number of stacked crates and objects, swathed in gray or blue plastic tarps, stood stacked left and right. The space beyond them opened up into a large hold with a kind of gallery or walkway running around it. Lamps hanging from the overhead lit it badly. There was no mistaking the crate containing the coffin in the hold's center. All around it, men fought. Dark-clad fighters pressed in from both sides, the Rimba Parak commandos from Anya's left, the knights from the right. A knot of pirates was being forced back upon the crate. Only a handful remained, but they were fighting hard. Anya saw knights and commandos die as well as pirates. Suddenly, she spotted Wira. At first, she didn't recognize him. Like his men, he wore indigo battle dress, although his long hair was confined by a midnight head rag like one of the pirates. Her heart jumped in her chest. He waded into the enemy ahead of his men, laying about with his sword. A huge pirate with an even bigger bare belly swung an outsized battle axe at him. He ducked the blow, slashed the man across the shins. As the pirate bent to clutch himself, Wira split his shaven skull. The pirates disengaged and drew back against the crate, and the fighting seemed to stop. Apparently, both knights and commandos were willing to wait and see how events proceeded. A tall figure dressed in a scarlet tunic stepped forward. He carried a pair of butterfly swords, single-edged weapons with metal knuckle bows and short, heavy blades almost like cleavers. He had a square, handsome face and neatly trimmed black hair and beard. Wira stepped forward, then rushed the man with two swords. Eddie Kau Kau caught Wira's downstroke with his swords in an upward X. Before he could riposte, the Sultan sidekicked him in the flat belly. The Sultan took a backhand slash at his opponent's chest, but Kau Kau blocked across his body with his left-hand sword held upward. The pirate spun around, crouching, slashing for Wira's right knee with the blade in his right hand. Wira jumped astonishingly high in the air, the broad blade swiping harmlessly beneath his boot. As he came down, he took a slash at Kau Kau's head. The pirate lord blocked with his left sword. He swept back, slashing the young Sultan across the stomach with his other weapon. Wira stepped back to regroup. He looked down as a line of skin appeared, pale against the midnight blue of his blouse. The middle of it was a shocking scarlet line. Wira seemed to freeze, staring down at himself as if paralyzed with horror at the pain at the sight of his own blood, at the shock of having his sacred person so violated. Grinning like a shark, Kau Kau advanced for the kill. Cocking his right butterfly sword back over his shoulder, the pirate thrust his left one for the Sultan's wide-open chest. The young Sultan moved with shocking speed. His sword flashed across his body, right to left. It struck the stabbing blade and knocked it across his opponent's broad chest. Turning his wrist sidearm, Wira slashed backhand right over the top of the pirate's sword arm. His curved blade sliced Kau Kau's throat. Blood spurting, the pirate leader took several steps back. His head lolled to one side. For a moment, Wira stood gazing down at his fallen foe, chest heaving. Blood streamed from the gash across his belly, wetly glistening black against the dark fabric of his uniform. With a flick of his wrist, he cleared blood from his curved blade. Then he raised his head to look at the surviving pirates. Only five remained standing.
On your knees, dogs.
The ragged men instantly threw down their weapons. Turning inward toward the crate, they fell into a kneeling position, lacing their hands behind their heads. Evidently, they knew the drill, as well they ought. They'd inflicted it on others often enough,